We'd like to welcome you to the microgreen classes, day one and then two. This is going to be the start. So just to introduce ourselves, we are Michelle and Robert Sullivan, and we have been growing microgreens commercially for a couple of years now, and we're just glad, happy that you guys have chosen to register and to be here today to be part of this seminar.
Yeah, we're just really sorry we weren't able to actually be there in person. We really wanted to be there in person. But, you know, we were expecting that the US-UK travel ban would have been lifted, I think, 31st of December, but it didn't happen from what we could see. So we were unable to attend, and then the UK is currently in lockdown, with all restaurants closed again, and nobody's allowed to go out. So we're at home. So where you usually find us anyway is at home. But thanks to technology, we're actually able to still be there and to be able to present. And it's great because obviously we assume that some people would have registered for this course. And so it's great that we're able to still be able to give you the information that you want, even though we're not there. And I do believe that at the end, if the technology doesn't fail us, we've been told that there should be a question and answer session right at the end of the second day, I believe.
So the first question that we just wanted to tackle is, what are microgreens? Actually, two questions. What are microgreens? And the other question is, why grow them? You know, I mean, there's a million things you can be growing. Why microgreens? So what are microgreens?
Well, microgreens, as you can see, they're quite... just pull these out. I'm planning for the whole root to come out, but hey. Microgreens, these really are pretty much ready to harvest. Mm. As you see, we just grow them to the cotyledon stage. Everything that this plant needed to get its life going was actually found within the seed. And you'll notice that when we get to the section on soil, we talk about that. We talk about the fact that, you know, you don't need any nutrients in the soil because everything is contained within the seed to get it at least to this stage. And then we actually come along and we harvest probably about here, and that's your microgreens. And so from what we understand is that I know there's been much research out there about microgreens, and some people, they use them as superfoods because they are supposed to be 40 times more nutritious than the mature plant. So that's a power pack of nutrients that you can add to your plate. And so it's not caught on as a superfood as much in the UK, to be quite honest with you. It's more a case of the chefs use it a lot as a garnish. And that's really been our revenue stream, has been from the restaurants and the chefs, because it's not really seen as a superfood as much over here, that it takes some kind of education. However, when the lockdown happened and all the restaurants had to close, we weren't sure whether what was going to happen with our microgreen sales, because we grow microgreens 365 days of the year, whereas we only grow in the field for the season, which is really from about May. We don't have sun in our field from October, when the clocks go back, until the clocks go forward, because of the way that the land is here, and with the forest that's behind us casts a shadow on our field. And so we weren't sure what we were going to do, because it was, you know, the winter time, and that was our main source of income at the time. However, God opened the way for our veg boxes. We started an out-of-season veg box service, and we added the microgreens that we were growing to our product list, and our consumer customers, or the retail customers, started buying microgreens, which was quite interesting. So there are some people out there that do understand it as a supergreen or a superfood, as a supergreen, superfood, whatever. And so they have been ordering these sort of 30 gram packets of microgreens along with their veg boxes, and so I assume they're putting it with their salads and putting it on their sandwiches and things like that, which has been a blessing. But what it's meant is that because of COVID and the lockdown, we've had to scale down our growing, so we don't grow as much microgreens anymore. But anyway, this is them. This is a microgreen, 40 times more nutritious, and yeah, that's it really.
Mm. And so why grow them? They're an easy way into the market, a quick way into the whole ag growing, ag lifestyle, you know, that we read about and that we aspire to, that we find in the writings of Ellen White, talking about this sort of agricultural lifestyle. Well, you know, if you've got a farm...
You're still working in the soil.
You're still working in the soil. And if you've got a farm, it's fine. You can be out there, 24 hours if you want to, and you can be farming. But if you haven't got a farm, maybe, but you just have small space inside your house, you can start growing.
It's a start.
And it's a start. It's a means to an end. So it's not the main thing. The main thing is getting out there in the soil, but it's a means to an end. It's just part of the pathway, and it's a good way of drumming up some revenue. You don't have to put too much in, and you don't have to start with too much investment. You can really start. I mean, we started it, and we'll show you a picture. We started growing in literally, which was like a little side cupboard room.
I'll see if I can put a picture into this video.
It wasn't even a room. It was like a
porch area. Didn't have any heating or anything.
No, and that's where we started, because that's all we had. We didn't even have any lights or anything like that. We just had like a lamp.
It was a normal lamp. It was a lamp that was one bulb, a clip sort of lamp with one bulb, but that one bulb was 6,500 kelvins, wasn't it? It was daylight. It was a daylight bulb.
That's what we used to grow with. So it's a quick way into the market, and it's a good way just to, you know, get the idea of growing and things like that. And also, potentially, it's a good way to drum up customers, which later on, once you get more and more established, those customers you can then turn to more of the growing that you're going to be doing out in the field, because you've already got a customer base from the microgreens.
Yeah, it can work both ways, really. If you've already got a customer base from your field, then it's just another product line.
Yeah.
Whereas for us, it kind of happened sort of the other way around, because we weren't fully established in the farm outside as yet, and we'd just come out of season, and we needed to continue to create revenue, and so we just took it to the Lord, and the Lord made it. It's really a testimony that we'd have to share probably another time, but it was amazing how God opened the way and pointed us in the direction of growing microgreens. And literally from the moment that he did that, I can share ever so slightly, and long story short, the Lord had pointed us to a wholesale customer, and we ended up walking away with a £2,000 per month
microgreen
contract, so to speak. But we didn't even have the space to grow that much microgreens, and that again is just another testimony for another time, how God then supplied the funds for us to be able to scale up from hardly anything to a massive room filled with everything. And so it was all his doing. We couldn't have done it by ourselves.
So in this section, we're just going to be talking about microgreen seeds, as in what varieties we grow, and also the seeding densities, the amount of grams per tray, and also how long it would take to germinate once you've put it on the side here. So we actually grow quite a lot of microgreens, so I'm just going to go from top to bottom. And like I said before, this has been sort of trial and error, depending on, as I said, the warmth of your room, size of the room, ventilation, da 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 da, all these things, humidity, all these things do make a difference. But anyway, rocket, and yes, I did say rocket, 8 grams per tray, and that would take about 2 to 3 days to germinate.
Arugula.
For some people, arugula, there's no such thing. It's actually rocket. Anyway, 8 grams, and it'll take about 2 to 3 days germination. Broccoli rabe, there's a difference between broccoli and broccoli
rab. But anyway, broccoli rab is about 10 grams. Sometimes you may want to pull back to 9 grams, but about 10 grams, and that's 2 to 3 days germination. Basil is 5 grams. It's very, very fine. You hardly put any seeds on the tray at all. 5 grams, and really you're looking at the best part of a week. It does take quite a long time to germinate. Coriander is 30 grams. You put
cilantro.
Coriander. There's no such thing as cilantro. But anyway, it's actually in the UK and the rest of the world. No. It's called coriander. C-O. Riander. 30 grams. So again, that's quite a lot. And coriander, again, takes a good week, sometimes 10 days. It's quite slow. Sunflower seeds, 75 grams per tray. Again, quite a lot. Spread all over, spread evenly, 75 grams. And again, will germinate probably in about a week, 5 to 7 days. Pea shoots, 150 grams. It's quite a lot. Again, that's 150 grams, and then you would need to soak the peas. As a matter of fact, yeah, I'll tell you the different little variants as well, because with the peas you do soak, pre-soak them. Some people don't. There's a whole big discussion, should you or should you not. Anyway, we found in our trials that when we soak them, you get bigger yields. So we soak them. So 150 grams of dried seed, soak them, then put them overnight, soaked, then put them over the trays. Again, that will take a good 3 or 4 days to germinate. Red cabbage, 10 grams per tray, 2 to 3 days germination. Rambo radish and China rose radish, which is, we did the China rose there. Again, both of them about 30 to 35 grams. I think I put about 33 grams, but about 30 to 35 grams, and again, 2 to 3 days for germination. What else we got? Curly cress, 10 grams, takes about 2 days. It's very, very quick. Curly cress is very, very quick. Red mustard frills, 6 grams, not a lot, but again, takes about 3 to 5 days to germinate. Okay, the next one is nasturtium. That takes 50 grams of seed, and that's dry seed, which you then soak, just like the peas. And actually, I forgot to say, sunflower seed as well. We said 75 grams of sunflower seed. You soak it before you seed it. So nasturtium, 50 grams of dried seed, soak it overnight. I just soak it for a couple of hours, drain it, and then apply that. Purple shiso is 5 grams. Again, hardly any seed. But purple shiso, the thing with that is that you actually, you put your first layer of soil on your tray, then you put your seed, and then you put another layer of thin soil on top. Just a very, very thin layer on top. That's for purple shiso. Actually, it's not for purple shiso. I just got confused because I've got two the same round. It's not purple shiso. It's actually lemon balm. Lemon balm is 5 grams. Let me do lemon balm first. Okay, lemon balm takes 5 grams of seed. So that's not a lot of seed. Put that on the soil, and then you take a small amount of soil and sprinkle that over the top. And for germination, you don't stack lemon balm. You actually put it straight under the lights. So they go straight out under the lights. They actually grow sort of like real plants. That's lemon balm. And then red vein sorrel, 10 grams of seed, and you put, again, a small amount of soil on top of the seed that you've spread out, and then you can put that straight out under the lights as well. So those are the two that go straight out under the lights. Why? I don't know, but that's how people grow them. Kohlrabi, 12 grams, and it takes about, actually, kohlrabi takes about 2 to 3 days to germinate. Red Russian kale, 12 grams of seed, again, 2 to 3 days to germinate. Broccoli calabrese, 12 grams. And rape, as well. That's 12 grams, because we normally kind of do those together. And they'll take about 2 to 3 days to germinate. They're very quick. And then you can sometimes buy like a broccoli mix. I think Johnny's Seeds. I know there's a company that's actually in America. I just can't remember the name of it. True Leaf Market or something like that. But you can buy a broccoli mix. It's the same thing. We can get it in the UK. But again, it's 12 grams and about 2 to 3 days germination. Now, the only other things to mention is purple basil, lemon basil, cinnamon basil and Thai basil. They're all the same. 5 grams of soil. Sorry, 5 grams of seed. And again, it takes 3 to 5 days for that really to germinate. And what I do with the basil is what I do with the other dome varieties is we dome our basil like this. And how we know they're ready is because they'll be an inch long or about 1.5 inches long. You know, you'll sort of weigh it up how long you want them to be. But we normally have them about 1.5 inches. And we actually grow them. We don't grow them in these 2-inch deep trays. We grow them in the 1-inch deep trays because they don't need a lot of soil, basil. But basil takes forever to grow. Right? If you've grown it, you'll know. That's seeds. Okay, in this section, we're just going to speak very briefly on growing material for the microgreens. It's a bit of a, I was going to say controversial, it's not controversial, it's just that lots of people have got different ideas on what they use. We actually grow in soil, so we grow in a peat, I was going to say peat based, it's not even peat based, it is peat, it's just peat. It's a multi-compost, but it's actually just peat, as it says on there, 100% sphagnum moss peat. And actually, in Scotland, we do have a lot of moss anyway. No recycled materials, you know. And the benefits for us is that, as far as we're concerned, as far as we know, and I think this is where the contention comes, with the research that we've done anyway, microgreens, they don't actually need nutrients in the soil, because they're not growing to a plant, they're just growing past the cotyledon. They're actually not even going to the cotyledon, which are the two true leaves. By the time they hit there, you would have already harvested them. So they're just growing as shoots. That's why they're micro shoots, microgreens. So they don't need any extra nutrients in the soil. Now, I know that doesn't mean that there are people, because I've seen there are people that grow microgreens in proper compost with all these different NPKs and blah blah blah, and that's fine. But you know, if your microgreen is in the ground, or sorry, growing for like 5 days once you've germinated it, it's not really there that long. Anyway, we grow in peat, and but a lot of people actually grow in various materials. Various these are some samples that we had, sort of these grow felt materials that you can get. So for example, you know, instead of the soil or the compost, they'll actually put down a strip of this, you know. It's not reusable. Once you've used it, that's it. It's finished. But, you know, these are materials which you can use. Again, these are neutral. They don't have any nutrients in them. So for example, the white one is actually 80% viscose and 20% polyester. And then the other wool one is, what is that? Yeah, just wool. Just wool. I mean, that's good material, to be fair. And then the purple one is a mix of all sorts. Acrylic, cotton, wool, viscose, polyester. So it's a good blend. But these are all meant to be good. In our trials, we didn't do this. And the reason why we didn't go with this is, we found that with the chefs that we were supplying, they were already getting microgreens. And they were saying that the microgreens that they were getting, and it comes from one particular supplier, they were finding that the product didn't last long, number one. And also they found that the product didn't have a strong flavour and strong taste. And we know because we did a bit of research and we found that that particular supplier, they grow on these sort of mediums. They don't grow in soil. And we were finding with ours, we don't know why, but the taste, like for example, when we grow basil, you know, you could smell basil at the other side of the room. It's really that strong. And we were finding as well that the taste is really good. And two, they were lasting more than a week, whereas most microgreens were just lasting a couple of days. But ours was lasting, you know, up to 2 weeks in the fridge. And we just put that down to the growing medium, because that's the only thing that's different. Plus the Lord, obviously, because without him, you know, none of this is going to work. So so we do believe that God is blessed in that way. And so we continue to use the peat-based growing medium. So peat-based growing medium. However, you can use these other alternatives. Some people actually do more of a hydroponic kind of thing. But, you know, experiment and see what works for you. This is what worked for us. And take it from there. So that's soil.
Okay, so in this section, we're going to be talking about trays. So it's not a long section to talk about. Growing trays, that is. Now, I know in America and other parts, from a lot of research that we've done, people normally grow microgreens in what they call 10-20 flats, 10-20 trays, 10 inches by 20 inches. In the UK, you can get them. They are just very expensive. So we didn't go that particular route. What we did instead was got a tray that was probably about half the size. So I'm just going to show you that now. So these trays, let me show you. I'll show you. We decided to get two types of trays for each growing microgreen. We've got, the first one is a tray that's got holes in it, as you can see. Yeah? And then the second tray that goes underneath does not have any holes. And the purpose for that is that the one with the holes, this is what we're going to put our growing medium in and put our seeds on. And so when we water, the water will be able to drain out through the holes and go into the base tray. So that's the reason for that. Now, the other thing that's different, what we did with ours, is that we decided to get two different thicknesses, as you can see. So one of them's probably like about an inch, and the other one's probably about 2 inches deep. So that's the depth. Because what we found is that some microgreens, they don't mind having quite shallow soil. For example, you know, red cabbage, broccoli. To be honest, even the radishes, they don't mind. Basil. It is basil. Yeah, even basil, they don't mind the 1-inch trays. But then if we're doing peas, if we're doing sunflower shoots, if we're doing nasturtiums, I don't know, maybe because they take a little bit longer in the soil, they seem to work better in a deeper depth. But again, it's up to you to, you know, to do your experiments and see which one will work for you. You know, so just recently I started doing our radish varieties, China Rose and Rambo. I started doing them in a 1-inch depth, and they seem to be fine. So you're just going to have to experiment. So once more, we've got the depth. Now let me just give you very quickly the dimensions, just in case somebody says, oh, what's the dimensions, Rob? So you're talking about nearly 10 inches, as you can see here, 10 inches by, what are we looking, 15? But again, remember, that's the lip. But then that's the same how you would measure a 10-20 flat. So we're just going all the way across. So 15 and then 10. So that's our growing, those are our growing trays. Two different depths, 1-inch or 2-inch. And then the other thing is we use two trays, one with a hole so that water can drain out, and the other one so that water can drain into it. That's the trays. So
today, this is what you've all been waiting for, the actual practical side, which is sowing the seeds for the microgreens. So today, as I think I mentioned before, we're actually going to be doing seeding some China rose radish microgreen seeds, and we're going to be doing about 35 grams of China rose radish. So I'm just doing four trays for today, so I'm just going to quickly, and I think I mentioned this before, actually did that wrong. And the last one, I mean, for radish, we found that the radish varieties, some varieties, they're a bit forgiving. You don't have to be exactly on the button when it comes to the weight, but some things, like basil, for example, you really need to stick to the actual weight itself. So I'm going to do somewhere around there. Yeah, let me do a little bit more. Okay, so that's the seeds done, and then I just stack them here, put them aside, so that as soon as I'm ready. So the next thing we're going to do is fill the trays with the soil. Now, I didn't mention this. Actually, I think I might have. The soil, the growing medium that we use is soil. It's peat, and for each tray, we've worked out the average amount of soil that you need for each tray, and it's roughly that much. I think it's like, I'm going to say probably about a litre and a half, something like that. Yeah, it's about that. Or about 5.5 cups or whatever. But again, you work this out soon. So we roughly fill to that line, and then before we measured this, we used to have to do this by guesswork, and obviously it took a little bit longer, and then we were also wasting a lot of soil. Doing it this way, you know exactly that each tray has got the right amount. And then I just even these out. Some people use different methods, either using their hands, I just get the big lumps out, and then just shake them a bit, just so that it gets more even. That's about it. But it still looks lumpy, so this is where this device comes in. And you've seen this before. And basically I made this, it's just out of some odd ends of wood. And the idea was I could use it to press down in the trays. I'm not pressing too hard, but as you can see, enough just to flatten them so that when we put in the seeds, it's got a flat surface. You see? So now that's a nice, even, flat surface. And so what I do now, after I've got that even surface, I then water. Not too much, as you can see, but I just water just an even coating, and that's it. The first go. So that's our first water. And then we put the seeds in. And again, there's no real technique to this, you know. They say as much as possible, just to, you know, get it as even as possible. Whatever technique works to do that. To be honest,
you know, normally the children get involved in this, because this is actually quite easy for them to do. They like doing the seeding. Actually, they like filling the trays and the seeding, to be honest. They'll do all of it. Make me redundant. And the last one. So that's it, nice even spread. Now with radish, you don't need to put another layer of soil. As I was explaining, some of the other seeds you do, but these you don't. So now all we need to do is another quick spritz of water, not too much. And that's it. As you can see, this is why we have the flood tray, because before, when we used to do this, when we first started, that would be the floor getting soaking wet. So, if you have a flood tray, but if you don't, you can just use smaller trays. That's how we used to do it. We didn't have any of this. So, these are watered, these are ready, and the next stage is for these to get ready for germination. So, stacking, putting on the shelves, and then ready for germination. Okay, so now that these are all watered, I'm going to stack them so that then they're ready for germination, and they'll be put on the shelves on the side. So, again, we're just putting them straight on top of each other. And now these are ready to go on to the germinating shelves. So now these microgreen seeds are ready for stacking and germinating. So it's just a simple case of taking them over to the rack here. Sometimes I have them even higher. It really depends, only because the room is warmer at the top. But we place them here. And then what I do is the top one needs to be covered. So this is where this particular device comes in handy again. I use it with an empty blank tray. Just put it inside, and then literally just stack that on top. So that gives a little bit of weight, keeps out the light, and makes sure that these seeds get all the right pressure that's needed. So for China Rose, they will take about 2-3 days to germinate. Again, it depends on the warmth, as we mentioned before, the temperature that's in your place. As I said, in here, temperature's gone down, it's 23.7, so that may be more 2 to 3 days. But if I can get the temperature up in here, extra lights, then it might be even sooner. They do germinate quite quick. And once they're germinated, then we will remove these and put them under light. But for now, they'll stay here, should I say, and they're nice and cozy, and they'll get ready to germinate. Okay, so it's been a couple of days since we've put the microgreens and their trays on the actual germinating area, which was dark. Sometimes I have the lights on, it doesn't matter, as long as the trays, all of the seed trays are actually covered, that's the main thing. So as you can see at the moment, all of the trays have germinated. This is China Rose, so it's all germinated nicely. To be fair, I could have actually taken these out maybe yesterday. They would have been ready. Now, what I also did was I weighted down the top tray with, I'll show you. I take this off. The top tray was weighted with an empty tray that had a piece of wood weight. And the idea of this is obviously just so that it presses down on the other trays and just keeps everything intact, so that there's not really much air or, any light getting in there. So that's what we use. Some people use, instead of this, which I made, because I use it actually to press the trays, which I showed you already in the video, some people just put soil in here, or some people put sand, some people put cement, but anything that's quite heavy that can weight down the actual microgreen trays as they're germinating, that will be really good. As I said, the main thing is to keep everything dark. So now we've got the trays germinated, I'm going to move them to over here. And as you can see, as I mentioned before, all of these trays, I mean, I could have actually put a little bit more seed on the last tray, but all of these have germinated. You know, as I said, I could have taken the lids off, you know, maybe yesterday, but that's fine. It's not a problem at all. And then from here, we leave them under the lights. As I mentioned before, I'm going to talk about the actual lights that we have and the brightness, the Kelvin, all of that. I'm going to speak about that later anyway. But we leave them under the lights. And the only other thing that we have to do now is water them. Sometimes I actually change them round after a day or two. I just switch them round because obviously they are going to be growing towards the light ever so slightly. So every now and again, I just come in and just switch them around so that they're growing more even. But other than that, keeping them under the light and then obviously watering, that's the only thing that we need to do here, just to keep an eye on things. With China rose radish, it's not so bad because you don't have any fungal problems or anything like that, so you don't have to spray any mold spray or antifungal spray. You just need to water them and they'll be fine. But other varieties, which we will talk about in the video, you would have to, like sunflower shoots, for example, you do have to use an antifungal spray just when you've uncovered them. But I'll show all of that, talk about that later on. So that's the uncovering, and now they're ready to continue growing. Okay, so in this section, we're going to be talking about lights, extractor fans, and also room temperature for the microgreens. So, as you probably know, one of the main features for growing microgreens is having lights. Now, these lights, some people say they're grow lights as a term. They are grow lights, however, grow lights are actually used in, I think, hydroponics and other forms of growing where you can actually grow like a lettuce indoors using lights, and they have different color ratios, color schemes. These lights are not grow lights in that respect. If you tried to grow a vegetable under these lights, it wouldn't grow at all. So this light is actually classed as daylight. So it's 6,500 Kelvin, and it's 55 watts. I don't think the watts actually matter so much, but the fact that it's daylight and the fact that it's 6,500 Kelvin, that means everything. And then the other thing is they're actual T8s. So these particular ones actually are LED T8s, but we've also got the fluorescent ones somewhere. Actually, on the other side of the room, but I'm just over here. So we've tried the LED and the fluorescent. The fluorescent does give off more heat to your room, whereas the LEDs, you get the same light, but it's not as warm in here. So, you know, we'll talk about temperature in a little bit. So, I don't know, pros and cons. Some people say LED, but I think the whole world is going LED anyway, and there probably won't be the T8 or T5 fluorescent tubes around much longer. But anyway, 6,500 Kelvin and 55 watt. We leave our lights on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, when we're growing commercially. So some people don't. Some people only have them on for like about 12 hours and then have them off at night. But we don't, and it means that I think we get a quicker grow, you know, germination and then harvest as well, versus if you've only got them on for 12 hours each day. So the height, as you can see here, it's probably about 8 inches between the tray, growing tray, and the actual lights themselves. This is what we decided to go with. Some people have a growing height of about 12 inches. Some people have even more. But we wanted to maximize the space because we are growing indoors, and we wanted to make sure that we could get as much trays Because when we're growing commercially, because at the moment everything's slowed down because of COVID. But just prior to COVID, when we were doing more, we were actually in another room. And all of these trays were full. So you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 growing areas. And so we wanted to make sure that we could maximize the height in between each growing area. So at the moment, as I said, there's about probably about 8 inches between the tray and the light. What else do you need to know about the lights? Let me just see. Just trying to think. Can't remember. No, that's about it, actually. Yeah, so lights are important. LED or fluorescent doesn't make a difference. Also, you just need to bear in mind whether you have them on for 12 hours or 24 hours. Again, this is all entirely up to you. All right, let's move on to the next one, which is extractor fans. Now, when we first started growing, we didn't have an extractor fan, but very, very quickly we realized that we did need an extractor fan. Why? Because we would have the door closed. It was actually our dining room. We would have the door closed, and whenever someone left the growing room or microgreen room door open, you would get this smell of, it's growing inside your house. It just really does smell a lot. And so we realized that that's probably not a good thing to have. And not just that, but also a lot of research that we were doing, it was leading to the fact that if you're growing indoors, you do need the air to be taken out, recycled, and taken out of your growing room and fresh air coming in. So the extractor fan does that. So this is our extractor fan here. It's not plugged in at the moment because even though we're still growing, the numbers of trays that we're doing is not as high as it used to be. So I can actually, let me bring this out so that you can see it. So this is the extractor fan here that that we got. We bought this off of eBay. I believe it was about £70. Again, you can just do the conversions and look around and see in your area how much that might be. But for us, it was £70, which is quite good. And what I did was I overcalculated how much, what the volume rate was. So this far exceeds the room that we actually have. But that's fine. I would rather that it's overcompensating and it could actually, you know, this could probably do like a whole downstairs and it would be fine to have this on. But we're just using it in one room. So, yeah. But this, we have this plugged on. Normally we don't, it comes with a sensor. I don't use a sensor. So as you can see on the dials, I just have it on. So it's just on all the time. So again, we have this on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We don't turn it off. So I don't see the need of having the sensor. However, it does have a sensor. You can set it to a certain temperature. When it gets to a certain temperature, you could have it so that the extractor fan will kick on. So let's say it gets to 28 degrees, then the extractor fan will kick on, and obviously, you know, hot air will come out, fresh air will come in. But I don't have it like that. I just have it running all the time. And I have it on maximum fan, roughly, there or thereabouts. So the other part of what's used for the extractor fan is this. I think this actually came with it. I can't remember if it did. I think it did. But anyway, one end goes to the extractor fan, and then the other end, obviously, it goes out straight outside. And normally we just have an open window and it goes straight out of the window. And obviously what's going to happen is it's just a hose, an extractor hose. I think it came with it. They're probably the same as what you probably use for tumble dryers, something like that. But this one is a plastic with a steel inside, steel sort of spring, but you could just get a complete metal one. I think that's what they have in America and places like that. And that just makes sure that all of your stale air is being taken out and then everything is being recycled all the time. Now, extractor fan, you saw there was a setting there for the temperature. The temperature for your growing room for the microgreens, as far as we've found out in our research, should be somewhere around 25, 24 degrees. That's Celsius. I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, but that's Celsius. So, and the humidity of your room should be, I mean, this is really low. This is only 23%. It should be about 40%, you know? That, these are rough averages, because the types of things that we're growing, you know, radish, you know, they don't really need sort of too hot. Some seeds actually do need the temperature a little bit more. But if you're around, we've found anyway, just with our little trials and tests. And this is the thing, when you're growing microgreens, they're very forgiving. So, you know, if you don't have 24 degrees, you have 28, it's fine. The microgreens aren't going to collapse. But you just trial and error to find where your optimal growing temperature is. For us, with the humidity that we have, which is, as I said, about 40% is kind of good, 24 degrees is really good. Now, when our humidity goes up, let's say it goes 60-70%, which we've had before, we've had it really, really high, when we didn't have this, which I'm about to show you. So when it goes really, really high, actually, no, not when it goes high. Ever since it started going high, what we use is a dehumidifier. Nothing new, you've probably seen them before. So, you know, the idea is we have this on, and we actually have it on so that, again, we just leave this equipment, we just leave these on 24 hours a day. We don't turn them on or off. And what we do is, it's not connected at the moment, but we normally have this pipe. It comes out the back of the dehumidifier, and we have it going automatically into sort of like a bucket. It's a bit bigger than that. I don't have it here. It's in the other room. And so what it means is that we can, once a week, it's collected enough water that it's right at the top, and then we need to take that out and throw that away and then go again. So the dehumidifier is just constantly taking water out of the air. It's amazing how much water actually comes here, but when you think about it, it would be, because not only are the microgreens, they're living organisms, they're living plants, so not only are they growing, but at the same time, as you'll see in one of the other videos, we're constantly watering them as well. So there is a lot of water that's accumulating in the room, and if you don't get that out, then that can lead to fungal growth and mold and things like that on your microgreens, which you do not want. And then, you know, you have to spray them, and which is not a problem, but to ease all of that, the easiest thing is to have the dehumidifier. So, dehumidifier we have running 24 hours a day. We don't turn it off. And we have a pipe which lets the water out into a bigger plastic tub, and we get rid of the water once a week. So that's a dehumidifier. The room temperature is about 24 degrees centigrade, and the humidity we need to keep at about 40. But again, depending on where you are, you may be able to get away with a lot higher or a lot lower. All depends. And then the other thing is we have the extractor fan, and we have that running 24 hours a day, as I said before, straight out to the window or something like that, and we have fresh air coming in. The last thing is the lights, and the lights that we use, they are the T8s. You can get T5s, T8s, just the length, the size of the tube, and we've used both. We have both the fluorescent and the fluorescent and the LED, and these are 6,500 Kelvin, and it's 55 watt. They're not officially grow lights, but obviously they grow the microgreens, but they don't need to be grow lights in that sense, because the microgreens, they're just reaching up for light, and then, you know, we're going to be harvesting before the cotyledon stage, so we don't need the microgreen to turn into a vegetable or anything like that. We just need it to grow up a little bit more. So that's the lights. So I'm hoping that that information you found useful and interesting, and I will see you in the next section. Okay, in this section, we're just going to talk about the growing times specific to each microgreen seed. Now, actually, we're not going to talk about it. What I'm going to do is signpost you to a PDF that you should have by now. I'm not sure if you've downloaded it already. And on that we'll have each seed variety that we grow and the specific germinating times, and also once they've germinated, because I did mention some of the germinating times anyway, but at least on the PDF, as you can see, you've got the germinating time, and then also, once they're under light, the growing time, it varies dramatically from just a couple of days to about 6 weeks. So that information is very, very critical, especially if maybe you're only going to grow, you know, pea and cabbage and some other thing, then at least you can know this. Let me just also add in there, as much as it is a reflection of what we do and what we've found, definitely just trial and error. You know, as you grow, then you see, as I mentioned before, your environment might be slightly warmer, might be slightly cooler, might be less humidity, more. And so these things are going to change. So this PDF is just to give you a rough guide to the growing times for microgreens. Okay, so in this section, we're talking about watering your microgreens. Now, if you remember, when we actually seeded them, we did put twice a small amount of water, just a little shower of water, but that's all dried out now since germination and since we've actually put them under the lights. They dry out quite quickly. So, you know, what I do is just take a look. This is where we have the second tray, and you can just sort of see, I don't know if you can see, there's a little bit of water inside there, but for example, you can see the roots coming out there, still quite wet, but for example, this one, a little bit drier, you know, so I'll probably give actually both of these just a little bit more water. So it's just a case of checking every day or every other day and seeing which varieties have sapped up all their water. Now, for example, China Rose and Rambo Radish, they drink a lot of water. Pea shoots, sunflower shoots, they drink a lot of water. Some things don't. So, for example, basil, that doesn't drink a lot of water at all. If you put water there, it will probably be there, you know, the following week. It's it just drinks very, very slowly. And also things like lemon balm, red vein sorrel, red mustard frills, they don't really drink a lot of water. But each day you come, take a look and just see. Now, obviously, when we are in full commercial production, which we're not at the moment, but when we are in full commercial production, you can't do things by hand, which is what I'm going to do now. We actually would use the spray hose because it's a lot quicker. But when we first started, this is how we used to do it. And even though we were growing commercially, we didn't have a spray hose. So this is just to show you, you know, you just use what you have. And we used to have a jug, just a little bit bigger than this, and water. And I would have to keep going to the kitchen, back and forth, water dripping all over the place. But it's part of the joys of growing. So anyway, I've looked at these and I've seen that probably I can give a little bit more water on here. So I'm just going to, this is called bottom watering, by the way. So lift up, a little bit of water, and then we just put it straight back down. And I'll do the same over here. A little bit of water, not too much, you know, because obviously if you put too much, when you close it, it's going to just spill down to the next row, which we've had that before, and you learn by experience that you don't really want that to happen. You want the other things to be as dry as possible on top. Having said that, some people don't bottom water. Some people actually water from the top. If you've got a hose, you can just water on the top, and they'll all sort of, the microgreens will come down to the ground. They will sort of fall over, but they will come back again. And the reason for that is that, you know, they do look like they're sort of dead, but they do just come back. So I'm not sure why people actually top water. We did for a while, and it was just a lot of mess. Water all over the place, water on the floor, water all over the place. But we didn't mind, but as we were learning, we were like, okay, we'll continue to see if we can find a better way. And that better way was using the trays at the bottom, putting the water inside that tray, and then when you close that, no water spilling either way. So that's bottom watering, which, as I said, really, you know, every other day, something like that. But just keep an eye on the different varieties of microgreens. And as you can see that they need watering, if they're slightly trying to fall over, then just top up water again. So that's watering microgreens.
Okay, so in this part of the microgreen growing, this is the exciting part. This is harvesting time.
Yeah.
So, very simple. We have a tray here that we want to harvest. It's all ready. To be fair, I could have let this grow another day or two. You know. But it's still harvestable quality, so it's not going to be a problem. But that's just me. I like them to grow a little bit more fuller. So, for our customers, we grow these to put in a container that will hold 30 grams. That's this here. 30 grams, this container. I think this container can take up to about 50, but we put 30 grams of microgreens inside here. Just a clamshell, very simple. And then we have a nice label, which I'll show you shortly. Okay. We do have another container that is for 100 grams for peas, things like that. Actually, we do pea shoots we put in there, and we also in the bigger containers we put nasturtiums as well, and mustard frills, red mustard frills. But anyway, so we're going to zero that, he says. Yeah, okay. And then we're just going to scissors. And I'm doing this the old-fashioned way. Now, when we're doing, you know, lots of trays, then I actually use a handheld device. I should have just had it here. But this is just easy if you're just doing three or four trays. It's not going to be a problem. So 30 grams right there, 30, 31. I always make sure that it's at least 30 or over. Now, some microgreen growers, they, when they cut, they put it into another basin and then they actually dry the microgreens with a fan. We used to do that. But what we were finding was that the quality would go. And I think it was just actually by a mistake, all of a sudden we realized, oh, the quality was a lot better if we didn't do the whole fanning and all that sort of stuff. So we just make sure that they're put in a uniformed way so that we have the stems facing one way and the heads facing the next way. I don't know if you can see that. Okay. I'll just do a couple more again so that you can see, just grabbing quite a bit all the way down to the bottom if there's anything that doesn't look too cycly. Uh, 31 again, and again, as you can see, stems down one end and the actual leaf structure all on the other end. This will be the more of the 10 grams. Just a little touch. 32, so that's fine. As I said, I always try and make sure that we've got at least 30, sometimes 31, 32. That's not a problem, but as long as we've got extra. And that's how they are.
Yeah, and as I was saying, this is the other cutting device that I would use. If we're doing, you know, lots of commercial, lots of trays, it just saves so much time. It's something that I thought about, and then I saw another person, another grower on YouTube using the same thing, and I thought, well, if he can use it, then so can we. And it's a game changer, seriously. Black & Decker, rechargeable battery, you know, all day long. And literally, I'm not going to do it now, but literally, you know, and you would just cut along. And I would just hold the tray up like this and just cut along.
Or you can use the quick cut harvester.
Yeah. Which we will do. Which is much better, actually. Yeah. Okay, so, again, just moving on quickly. So the last thing that we do after we've harvested is just put on our labels. And that's it. That's the harvesting from here. Obviously, once we've had the labels in, then we'll just be packing them in boxes, or if it's the night before, we'll then put them in the fridge, in the refrigerator, out in the garage, just to keep them nice and cool, and then straight out to the customers. So, really, that's your the microgreen growing process from day one seeding all the way through to harvesting.
You'll never guess what. That is the end of the microgreen 101 session.
Okay, so I hope, as I said, we're hoping that you found that of use. And I think now we've got a few minutes, we can just dive right in. If anybody's got any questions, now's the time. And God willing, we'll see if we can share.
Hi, this is Raul again from Texas. Just following up on the question I asked earlier. I know we had technical troubles. You answered the why microgreens, and praise the Lord for the way he's led you. Very much enjoyed the microgreens 101 session as well. We took furious notes. Thank you so much for that valuable information. I wanted to add one more question to the revenue question I asked before. Is kind of a two-part question. Do you guys recycle the peat moss after you harvested the microgreens? And if any of your customers ever requested that you include that so they can cut it themselves in the package once they've received shipment?
Yeah, that's a very, very good question. And let me just answer the second half very quickly, Raul, what you asked in terms of revenues. So at our peak, just for microgreens, we were doing about £2,500 of microgreens a month.
But that was not long after we actually started. It was just a few months in.
Yeah.
And we hadn't even really... I mean, we say that we were selling into seven different towns, but we hadn't really even touched these towns. This was just through recommendations. We hadn't done any formal going around. Can you hear us okay?
Yep. Yeah, you're good.
Oh, right. Okay. Any formal going around, and actually, you know, we hadn't even touched Edinburgh really.
Yeah. So there's a lot of potential.
There was a lot more potential. And to answer your question from earlier, the rack that you can see in the video, at the room that we were using, had the equivalent of six of those racks, so the wooden frame with the lights and everything on. And so if those were filled completely, and you've got six of them, we worked out that particular room would give us about £5,000 per month in revenue.
Hmm. That said, it's full. And then the other, to answer your question on with the peat, we don't recycle. What we found is that once you've used the product once, that's really it. Because, you know, there's seeds and roots that are involved and this, that, the other. But what we do is we put it all on our compost pile. And then the other question was to do with if you can give that as a package item to the chefs. We had looked into that, but it was just down to demand. We were prepared to do it. We only had one chef that was looking at us growing the microgreens and having them so that he could harvest and he would have the peat and the tray and everything.
The problem with introducing peat into a restaurant
is that here the health and safety department wouldn't really allow for that.
Mm.
And so I was actually doing the growing for that particular chef, and he requested that it grow in a completely different medium, and we used what's that stuff called? That white stuff.
Coconut. Yeah. Vermiculite.
Yeah, we actually grew it in vermiculite. And vermiculite could be allowed in the restaurant, but they couldn't have dirt in the restaurant. Strange. Yeah. So.
Hope that answers your question, Raul.
Yeah, thank you very much. I have a few more, but I'm going to email you directly to be respectful of those behind me. God bless you both.
Okay.
And God bless you both, and thank you so much for sharing. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Raul. Thank you.
Yeah, my name is Gerald, and I'm from Texas. And I was just curious on your, when you said you grow wheatgrass, do you grow that in 2-inch deep trays or 1-inch deep trays? And how much does one tray of wheatgrass yield in ounces?
Now, sadly, we're not going to be able to answer that question in full for you. I assume you've been on our website and you've seen that it says wheatgrass coming soon. We haven't put it to seed yet.
Okay.
It's a new line that's going to be going along with our raw juicing. And, yeah, so...
Okay.
But,
watch this space. And as soon as we've done our trials and got the information, then we'll be sure to share it with you guys at AdAgra.
Yeah, I mean, if you follow us, I don't know if you have Instagram, or if you can email us or something, and as soon as we've got the information, which will be in the next couple of weeks, then we'll be sure to share that information with you.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, thank you so much. My name is Julie, and I'm also from Texas. And because there's so much sunshine in Texas, have you had any experience, or do you think it would work outdoor without the lights? Have you ever?
That's a very good question. And we did the trials. They were both indoors and outdoors, and we grew in our caterpillar tunnel. And yeah, it worked fine in the middle of the season when we had full sun. As a matter of fact,
they grew quicker,
mm-hmm. and the yields, because what we were looking at was the yields, you were getting way more yields. Mm. The microgreens were actually slightly bigger as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, that would work fine in somewhere like Texas or somewhere that has full sun.
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Hi there. My name is Davey. I'm from Austin, Texas. And my question was, is watering a laborious process when you have a large amount of commercial goods? And if so, would it be worth it to do a hydroponic system to automate it and make it go quicker? And if so, what would you recommend?
Yeah, again, that's a very, very good question. And it is very, very labor-consuming. As I said, I used to do it by hand, as in with a jug. And that would take hours. Then we started using a hose. And even then, that would still take... I could get it down, probably about an hour to do the whole room. But even so, we were actually looking at any sort of automated way of doing it. As yet, we haven't found a proper automated way. Because the problem that you have is that you still have to keep checking your microgreens every day, because some plants, even a tray next to each other, one can pick up all the water and need watering, and the tray next to it has still got water. So, I don't know of any fully automated system that would work. But, it would be handy.
All right, well, thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Hello, I have a question. With the uncertainty that we're living in with restaurants, I remember you mentioned that's one of your biggest revenues. What is the future like for microgreens from your perspective in terms of, for some of us that are trying, perhaps we would like to go into this type of business, but then again, with the opening and closing of restaurants, it's very unknown. How do you feel about this? And what is your advice for someone like us that would like to start the business?
Very good question. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing is, first and foremost, is that the way that we look at things is that this is the Lord's business, number one, and that he will always make a way, and he sees the future, and so he knows what exactly we need. And yesterday it may have been restaurants, and tomorrow it could be a market stream that we've never even thought of. But as long as we're doing what God is asking us to do, then he will figure out all of the ins and outs. And just to share with you, the day that we COVID hit and we went into a national lockdown, we realized that all of our revenue disappeared overnight. We had no revenue to look to. And so we said that we would just close down the microgreens, we would just turn off all the lights, and as a matter of fact, that's what we did. And we just got on our knees and prayed. And to cut a long testimony short, within the same week, God provided another revenue stream where we had even more customers than what we had before. So what I'm just trying to say is that we can only mitigate for certain things, but as long as we're doing what God is asking us to do, then he will make a way. Obviously, we've got to do our due diligence. We've got to check things out, see what the market's like, do research in your area, see what the competitors are like, if there are any competitors, do your pricing and work things out. But at the end of the day, you need to leave it all in God's hands.
The other thing is that your context could be different. For us, because we are the UK, and where we're based in the UK is Aberdeen. Now, if we were in London, chances are we'd have a huge consumer interest because you find that down south and in the cities, folks are a little bit more sort of ahead of the game in terms of seeing it as a superfood. But in Aberdeen, it's not really caught on as much. So that's why our revenue comes from restaurants and chefs. But where you are could be a completely different situation, and folks may know about microgreens. And if that's the case, then you have a market that you can go straight into.
Yeah. So we hope that helps.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Caleb here. So I was wondering, when you're harvesting, so you harvest with scissors and put them directly into containers. You're saying when you do more, you harvest with the shears. So then would you put it into a main container and then handle them a couple more times? And put them in smaller containers, or how? Is that what
Yeah,
you do,
that's
or?
Correct. Yeah. And okay. And what would happen, Caleb, is that when we're using the shears, the mechanical shears, obviously, if you've used those, the microgreens do get disheveled. They get, you know, knocked around a bit more. So you can't now
put them in one way.
You can't have them in one way. Mm-hmm. But at least you could get past the hurdle of having to dry them. Because, as I said, for a good nearly a year, we were drying them all the time, and that was quite a long process.
It was long.
But for months now, we haven't been drying them at all. We don't dry them at all. We just harvest with the scissors, put them straight in, and we're good to go.
Yeah, but as soon as you've got them all mixed up in some kind of bowl, then you will need to dry them a little.
Yeah, just a bit, and then get them into
that moisture in the package is going to affect its shelf life.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
But there was another thing that we were looking at, and that's why you get these like little moisture strips that you can put in the bottom of the containers. We were looking into it, but we haven't actually used them yet. Yeah. Whereas, you know, then you could put them in with a little bit more moisture on them.
And they should be fine.
And it should just kind of absorb that moisture, and that should extend the shelf life. But in the US, you may be able to find a company that can supply something like that for you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel. I'm from Indiana. I had a question about reusing the seeds. Are you able to use the seeds a second time, so to speak, once you cut the plants themselves, and then are they able to grow back so you can harvest them again, or no?
Yeah, that's a good question. What we've found is no.
No?
But that's us. I mean, it may work, but we found that, you know, with the varieties that we grow, that once we've cut them the once, that's really it. There isn't any regrowth.
I think red sorrel or lemon balm used to be quite good like that.
Yeah, that's sorry. Yeah, actually, yeah. Lemon balm was the only one that looked like it could regrow.
And red vein sorrel.
Yeah, a little bit. But again, but with the red vein sorrel, the yields were...
You find that the yields will be so low
that
it's taking up way too much real estate in your room.
Because it's going to take a long time to grow anyway. It's not, you know, red vein sorrel, it takes best part of a month to grow.
Yeah.
So the majority of the seeds that we grow, you're not going to get the repeat growth to harvest again.
Thank you.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.